What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 102. Today, this podcast is all about the power of an all-meat diet. Specifically, it's also called the carnivore diet. So there's an aspect to this diet that I don't think a lot of people talk about. So I wanted to take more of a deep dive into that because it's very popular now. You know, going keto, going low carb, and going zero carb like a carnivore diet is very popular. So this is just a whole other aspect to it. But first, we're going to start with the article of the week. And this article of the week, I thought was pretty, what's the right word? Relevant for today's climate, because it talks about vitamin C. And I know with COVID going around and everybody worried about their immune system, people are talking about vitamin C like it's, you know, I don't know, a cure-all, you know, that they can't get enough vitamin C. They take as much as they can. But I have known for a long time that excessive vitamin C, especially from a supplement form, you know, ascorbic acid, can be damaging. So the article this week is titled Acute Oxalate Neuropathy Induced by Oral High Dose Vitamin C Alternative Treatment. And this article you can find on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com if you're interested. But Tom, do you want to go over, I guess, what the article was real quick?
Yeah, so it's a 59-year-old woman. She has cancer, and instead of doing like the traditional route of radiation and chemotherapy, she decides to do an alternative treatment with oral high dose vitamin C. So most likely a bunch of vitamin C supplements. So it doesn't really get into how she's taking her vitamin C, but most likely in pill form. So she does that for, is it like 30 days? And then she gets acute renal failure.
Yeah. Not a long time at all.
Yes. And honestly, like, 4 grams is all she was taking, and 4 grams of vitamin C is not a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, like, if you're talking about, like, natural sources, I don't know how many oranges or how many, like, berries you would have to get, have to eat to get 4 grams of vitamin C, but that's, like, 4 little pills. Or what was the supplement that you were talking about earlier?
I was talking about Airborne.
Airborne, yeah, thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah. Like, what everybody takes before they get sick.
Exactly.
I'm sure the sales of that have been going through the roof at this time.
So, I mean, because yeah, I think
there's
in that,
an upper limit to that.
Yeah, there is. I think there's like at least 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram in Airborne. And I'm not sure what the like a recommended dose is for Airborne. I'm not sure if they recommend like once a day in the packaging or twice a day in the packaging. But if you are supplementing with that type of vitamin C, it is very easy to get 4 grams. Like it just is. And I don't know if you ever had like this a vitamin C chewable pills. I know for the longest time, my mom and my dad would have like vitamin C just on the table, and that would almost be like a treat because they were so sweet. They were like little candies, and I think each one was maybe like 100, but still, like you would eat, I don't know, 10 through 20 just throughout the day because they're just so small, so sweet, and everyone thinks vitamin C is like, I don't know, gets a free pass because if you know anything about vitamins, you know vitamin C is water soluble. So most people think, oh, it's fine. You can eat as much as you want. It's a similar argument with like vitamin B, all the B vitamins being water soluble. You can take as much as you want and you just pee it out. But the thing with vitamin C is as your body absorbs it, it turns, well, this is specifically, I'm talking about ascorbic acid, which is a vitamin C you find in supplemental form. The vitamin C from Whole Foods is different, but we're not talking about that. No one is going to go out and eat 20 pounds of oranges. It's not going to happen. But the ascorbic acid, which you find in supplemental vitamin C, turns into oxalic acid in the body. And that it turns into kidney stones. That's what happens. So this lady took 4 grams of vitamin C every day instead of doing chemo, which, I mean, more power to her because me and you both know how shitty chemo is and how shitty traditional cancer therapy is. Like, I don't agree with it at all. But she was just misguided like taking that much vitamin C is stupid. And obviously, I think, I don't know, if I took 4 grams of vitamin C, would I die? I don't know. Would my kidneys go into kidney failure? I don't know. Maybe this lady was already compromised. She had cancer. Did she have a genetic predisposition to form kidney stones and also these like kidney oxalates? Maybe. But the point stands that excessive dietary vitamin C, you know, from a supplement, is harmful. Like, it's not beneficial, and people should know that during this environment, during the COVID, you know, epidemic.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it is water soluble, so you will pee out if you do take any in excess. But as this shows you, there is a limit to that, and it will just destroy your kidneys.
Yeah, so that's article of the week. I thought it was interesting, and it kind of, if you want to learn more about cancer, we do have a Keto for Cancer podcast. I think it's in the 80s, like 80 and 81, something like that. So you can learn more about that. And I do mention, I think we briefly talk about why people think vitamin C is like a cancer treatment, but it's way more complicated than people think. Like, you're not going to get the same effects from intravenous vitamin C than you will from like just taking a vitamin C supplement. Is completely different. And like the vitamin C treatment for cancer, where they shoot you up with the IV of it, is so much vitamin C and turns into a pro-oxidant. So it actually kills cells. It's not an antioxidant. So it's completely opposite of what people think. So this, like, we don't have to go into that now because it's way too much of a like topic. But listen to that Keto for Cancer if you really want to learn more about that.
All right, so you ready to get into today's topic?
Yeah. So, like, me and you are both obviously pro meat eaters, you know, like, we understand that the bulk of your nutrition, your vitamins and minerals, your essential amino acids, your essential fatty acids are going to come from meat. And that's really not arguable, in my opinion. It's just, it is what it is. But there's just, I guess I titled this one, The Power of the Carnivore Diet. There is something to it that is healing, you know, like, we've seen people heal themselves from various conditions, stuff like diabetes and other autoimmune issues, and people have lowered their CAC scores, which are coronary artery calcification scores. That's like a real good indicator of heart disease. So if that score is really high, you're most likely going to have a heart attack fairly soon. If that number is really low, you're probably going to be safe. So people have gone on these all-meat diets, and all these markers have improved. You know, so the carnivore diet is capable of healing a lot of conditions. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. You know, that's why I promote it to a lot of people. Like, the complete elimination of anti-nutrients, the focus on quality amino acids and fatty acids, and the bioavailability of the vitamins and minerals is through the roof. You know, you're getting everything in the most bioavailable form, so our body doesn't have to work for it. You know, our body doesn't have to convert retinol to vitamin A, it just gets vitamin A. It's just how it is. It doesn't have to convert these like supplemental vitamin D's into active vitamin D. You just get the real vitamin D. And that's what you get from these animal source foods. But one aspect of the carnivore diet that is underappreciated, in my opinion, is the level of carnosine in the diet. And carnosine is C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E. This is something that no one talks about. It's just, it's kind of confusing. Honestly, it just is. And it really doesn't jive with the current, like, plant-based narrative. And me and you both know this. Like, if you talk about health and you cut out plants, people just stop listening.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to really talk to anybody that isn't already in this field and has already, like, done all the research and kind of come to the same conclusion as you, or at least have tried it. Yeah. It's really hard. It's really hard to get through to those people.
Very hard.
And we have not talked about carnosine in the past on this podcast. I know we talked about carnitine, which those two sound very similar. They look alike. We talked about carnitine a lot in podcasts, but this is the first time we're really going into depth on carnosine.
Yeah, it is. And so, like, in my opinion, when people talk about superfoods, like things containing antioxidants like blueberries or some, like, I don't know, random root vegetable they find, like the Congo, most of that stuff is either straight trash, or the nutrients in those foods just aren't really bioavailable, so the body doesn't absorb them well. Like, most of those, like, hype foods you hear about, you know, there's a new one pretty much, like, every year, most of them are trash. So when people talk about powerful antioxidants and real superfoods, they should talk about foods high in carnosine, because that's how powerful carnosine is. And for this podcast, I really base a lot of this stuff on two papers, and I have them on the website. So the first one is on the enigma of carnosine's anti-aging actions, and the second one is called Glycation, Aging, and Carnosine: Are Carnivorous Diets Beneficial? So if you want to read either of those articles, they're on the website. So TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com, just go there and you can find them. They're fairly short articles, not very complicated, so I recommend you read them if you're interested in going low carb or zero carb. And these papers really focus on aging and glycation and carnosine's powerful anti-glycation properties. And if you do read them, you'll see the word senescence a lot, and that's basically a fancy word for aging. So carnosine fights against this. They fight against senescence, so they keep us younger for longer. Now, that sounds good to you, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one thing that it's not talking about is it's not only focusing on, like, anti-aging, but it's also focusing on, like, extending lifespan. It does that as well. Yeah. I mean, they don't really mention it that much, but if you look in the studies, it does show that it does increase lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we all want. You know, if you're healthy and strong, you want to live as long as you can.
We want to be young forever.
That's it. So to explain glycation real quick, because I'm going to mention that a lot through this podcast, it's just like, I don't know, go look at your face or your hands. You see those wrinkles? That's glycation. That's two proteins sticking together when they aren't supposed to and becoming dysfunctional. And that leads to an increase in overall inflammation in our bodies. And it's one of the hallmarks of aging. Like, obviously, you have no wrinkles as a baby. Then you look at that 80-year-old uncle, and he's wrinkly as shit. It's just what happens. And it happens all the time within our body. But obviously, we can't see that. So our outward representation of glycation is wrinkles. And there's another one. You can also think of cataracts in your eyes. That's glycation and something associated with it called cross-linking that occurs within the lenses of our eyes. And if you didn't know, diabetics are very, very prone to vision problems. Like, one of the complications of diabetes is blindness. No one talks about it because it's not pretty, but it happens very often. And that's because they have constantly elevated blood sugars and a constant increase in the amount of glycation occurring in their body at all times. So it promotes the formation of cataracts and they pretty much go blind. And that happens through glycation. So what causes glycation? And really, you can just sound out the word. Like, what does glycation sound like? It sounds like glucose. So yeah, it's primarily sugars in the body that cause it, or byproducts of sugar metabolism, like the aldehyde methylglyoxal, that contribute to glycation and the formation of ages. And if you really want to know more about methylglyoxal, like, I just dropped that big-ass fancy word like out of nowhere, we have a whole podcast on it. So episode 73, it's called Cleaner Fuels. If you want to learn more about methylglyoxal, just listen to that. It's actually a really interesting podcast. I really like it. We compare what happens when you eat carbs and what happens when you eat fats and just what's a cleaner fuel source. Obviously, it's fats, but we go into methylglyoxal real deep. So listen to that if you want to know. But just the short and sweet part of it, methylglyoxal is some terrible shit. Like, it really is not good for our body in any sense. So it's just real bad stuff. But yeah, to go back to ages. So ages are called, or that means, advanced glycation end products. So that's what glycated proteins eventually turn into if they are not tended to fairly quickly. And so just a quick side note, because we know we did a podcast maybe like 5 weeks back on sugar versus sugar. And I really talked about sugar is what it is. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and damn sugar completely. Like, I think carbs can be in a healthy diet, even though I'm a low carb guy. But I'm not the biggest fan of fructose. And one of the reasons is fructose is 10 times more likely to cause glycation than glucose. So basically, fructose is stickier in our blood than glucose. It's more reactive. And that's just one of the reasons I don't like fructose. And you can go back and listen to that podcast and learn more about that if you want. But this has been shown in various studies. So here's a quote outlining that. Quote, levels of advanced glycated end products in the plasma of vegetarians were higher than those detected in omnivores. As an explanation from a 2002 study suggests that the higher intake of fructose by the vegetarians induces the raised age plasma levels, end quote. So it could be the increased intake of fructose leading to more advanced glycated end products, But it could also be the decreased intake of carnosine. So here's a quote. Quote, vegetarians who do not consume much carnosine in their diet tend to have higher levels of glycosylated proteins in their bodies than do people who eat meat. End quote. So do you want to talk about that real quick? I mean, what happened? I thought vegetarian diets were supposed to be so healthy.
Well, I mean, I guess they are if you supplement with a bunch of carnosine and all the other C's that we've mentioned in previous podcasts.
Yeah, the five C's. So cholesterol, carnitine, carnosine, creatine, and oh shit, what's the last one?
Choline.
Choline, yeah. So the five C's that you only find in animal-based products. So yeah, so these vegetarians have higher levels of pretty much glycation going on in their bodies, which is not a good thing. Like, that's all bad. So that's just a quick overview of glycation. Not a good thing. It's happening all the time, because even if you're on a zero-carb diet, we are going to have blood sugar levels. Like, it's just, you know, without that, we would die. So it happens. But how does glycation and carnosine tie back into the carnivore diet? Like, why is this so important in the carnivore diet? And really, it's simple. That the level of carnosine is higher. And that's because you only find carnosine in meat. And it's specifically very high in muscle meat and brain tissue. And obviously, most people aren't eating animal brains, so most people are just going to get it from, you know, steaks and chicken breasts and, you know, whatever, pork chops, right? And it's actually, these levels are completely mirrored in humans. So in humans, it's highest in muscle, but it's also found very high in our brains as well. And that makes perfect sense, since our muscles store sugar and our brains use sugar for fuel a lot of the time. So having carnosine there is protective. And carnosine isn't technically essential because our body can make it. But in order to make it, everything needs to be perfect. And we've talked about that a lot of times, right? Like, some things aren't essential, but they should be considered essential.
I mean, pretty much everything should be considered, like, essential. Because if you don't have the right tools to make it, then you're not going to make it. Like, you can't just turn something out of nothing. Like, you need the precursors to be there, and if you don't have them, then you're not going to make it. So basically everything is basically conditionally essential.
There was a paper fairly within the last year that talked about just the level of, like, metabolic dysfunction in America. It says something like 60 or 70% of Americans are considered, like, metabolically unhealthy. Do you remember that?
So I've never actually looked at the study, but the figure I keep hearing over and over again is 88%.
It was super high.
Yeah, it's like only 12% of the population is considered to be metabolically healthy.
Right.
And I'm wondering how much of that just has to do with age. Like, is it just a bunch of young people that are metabolically healthy, and then a few people that are like us that, like, are all about this lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't look at that paper either, so I don't know if it was age. I don't know if it simply just looked at BMI and realized, like, damn near everyone's overweight, and that's how they, you know, classified metabolically healthy or unhealthy. But either way, the point is that if you aren't metabolically healthy, good luck making all these things in your body. Good luck making enough carnosine. Like, it's just not going to happen. So,
yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week, is most of the food that we eat nowadays is the complete opposite of nutrient dense. Like, everything is so nutrient poor. Like, good luck getting all the nutrients your body needs. Not only all the nutrients your body needs, but then all it needs to make all the other things that you're not getting.
Exactly. Yeah. So what is carnosine specifically? So carnosine is a naturally occurring dipeptide, meaning it's made of two amino acids, pretty much is bonded together, alanine and histidine. And so how does it work? So carnosine is a potent anti-glycator. It basically gives the sugar in our body a place to bind free of charge. So a sugar that binds to carnosine doesn't damage it, or it doesn't release reactive oxygen species, leading to an increase in inflammation. Because remember, sugar is very sticky. Fructose is 10 times more stickier than glucose, but glucose itself is still sticky. So when it binds to these sugars, or excuse me, these proteins in our body, causes a problem. But when it binds to carnosine, no problem at all. And it's not just sugar that binds to carnosine. And that's what makes it so, I guess, confusing for scientists, because carnosine does so much. Carnosine has the capacity to bind to and eliminate various deadly toxins in our bodies. And I mentioned methylglyoxal already and how bad that stuff is. Pretty much, like, for diabetes, A diabetic will have very high levels of methylglyoxal. That's why they cut off their toes. That's why they don't heal from infections. It's all because of methylglyoxal. But carnosine can bind to methylglyoxal and eliminate it. And if you listen to our podcast on industrial seed oils, you'll know just how bad those are. You know, if you're cleaning up your diet, that's exactly what you should cut out first. Soy, corn oil, canola oil, just cut those out. But one of the many reasons that they're so bad is that they contain very damaging aldehyde products, something like alkylene or malonyldialdehyde. And these compounds are completely cytotoxic, meaning they just straight kill cells. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They are the worst of the worst. They are toxic to our body. But carnosine can bind to these compounds and eliminate them from our body. Super, super powerful stuff. And I have a quote here that outlines that. So, quote, "The dipeptide has been shown to inhibit formation of protein carbonyls and cross-linking induced by reduced sugars and other reactive aldehydes like malonyldialdehyde and methylglyoxal. Furthermore, adducts, which is just that's what the product of carnosine binding to things, formed by carnosine and damaging aldehydes have been characterized. The dipeptide can also suppress age formation and age-induced protein modification," end quote. So that's powerful, man, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. It's clearing out so many of the worst toxins in our body. Like, not only just the worst toxins from glycation or glycolysis, the harmful byproducts of that, but then it's also dealing with a bunch of aldehydes, which are, like you said earlier, just straight toxic to all cells. So pretty much the worst toxins that you could be getting in your body, this carnosine is binding to them and preventing them from causing any damage. It's essential. It's so important.
So important. Yeah. And remember, glycation alters proteins. So, and that's all humans are. We're just an accumulation of a shit ton of proteins, right? So it damages them in a way that they become dysfunctional. And like I said earlier, this is one of the hallmarks of aging. The accumulation of these altered proteins and the negative effects that that causes. Carnosine fights against this, and that's results in delay of aging, which is exactly what we want. We want to be younger for longer. And here's a quote outlining that. So, quote, "Amongst carnosine's enigmatic properties are its apparent anti-aging actions. The dipeptide is one of the very few naturally occurring compounds which suppresses cell senescence, induces rejuvenating effects, and protects against telomere shortening," end quote. I mean, that's a powerful sentence right there.
Yeah, telomere shortening is pretty much, like, telomere length is one of the best, like, measurements that we have at the moment of measuring, like, how old we actually are or how old our biological age is versus, like, how old we are on the calendar. And that's, like, if it protects against telomere shortening, that means it's keeping us younger for longer. That's exactly what we want out of life.
Yeah, and just, like, if you don't know what telomere is, you can think of it just like our chromosomes. That's just our genetic code. That's just all of our DNA. So when our cells divide, when you have children, you know, you're making babies, your cells just replicate, and that's part of your telomeres, what it is. That's just your entire genetic code. It's all it is. So if we can protect our telomeres, which are like kind of the end caps on our code, it's a good thing. It's what you want to do. So why hasn't more research been done on this? And this is a very cynical quote, but I loved it, so I pulled it out. So, quote, "The present discussion has outlined a case for more research in this area. But because carnosine cannot be patented, one wonders whether the likely absence of any large financial profit from such studies would hinder investigation," end quote. That's sad but true, you know?
It is, but I am going to go back to this. I've said this, I don't know how many times in the past. Come on, McDonald's. You serve so much beef. Come on. Put in the research for this. Make it so that you have evidence to back up why you sell so much beef. If you have, like, your beef hamburger patties as the most healthiest, most nutrient-dense food out there, has all these anti-aging properties, I think that might boost your sales a little bit. Maybe that's just me, but, I mean, come on. Somebody's got to do it. There are some big beef people out there. Why isn't somebody funding this research?
Yeah, I swear to God, I think you're the only person who brings up that point. I don't think it's a bad point. Like, it doesn't make sense that they don't. But they just don't. Like, it just, that's a fact of it, you know?
I guess they just don't need to, but I mean, come on, like,
maybe if their, like, profits started to decrease, they would. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, we'll see. So, we know carnosine in beef is bioavailable. It's been shown that after eating a steak, the level of carnosine increases in our blood. So that's important. You know, what's the point of taking in these nutrients if they're not bioavailable? So carnosine in food is bioavailable. And there's about 1,500 milligrams of carnosine in a pound of beef and close to 2,000 milligrams in similar cuts of pork or chicken. And don't tell Saladino that. Paul Saladino, he's like a zero-carb carnivore doctor who hates pork and chicken, but hey, whatever. And if you're going to recommend with it, I mean, if you're going to supplement with it, the recommendation is about 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram. If you are vegetarian or just looking to increase the amount of carnosine in your body. But if you're on the carnivore diet, you can easily reach that just by eating more meat. Someone who can easily eat like 5 pounds of meat a day, like me, is getting anywhere from 7,500 milligrams to 10,000 milligrams of carnosine every day, you know, depending on what type of cuts they eat. So that is a lot of carnosine. And that's the power of the carnivore diet. Like, you're replacing all your calorie sources with just meat. So, of course, you're going to be getting more carnosine. And that's really, I think, an aspect that no one talks about. They talk about it being zero carb, which is great. You know, the vast majority of people don't need carbohydrates. You're not an athlete. You're not looking to put on muscle like me. You're just, you know, going through your day-to-day life, living in a cubicle. You don't need carbs. But the levels of carnosine being higher helps everyone. So, in my opinion, that's really the power of the carnivore diet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one thing that I remember reading in the study, but I didn't see, like, really them give a mechanism, is that carnosine also increases nitric oxide production, which is essential for heart health or for athletic performance as well. So, like, that's another boost as far as carnosine is concerned. And if you're thinking about a carnivore diet, a lot of the harmful byproducts that Tyson was mentioning, the aldehydes and methylglycoxal, those type of things, those things are produced a lot more in a standard American diet than they are if you're eating like a carnivore diet. So just being on a carnivore diet, you're going to be creating a lot less of those harmful byproducts. And then also with it, you have that carnosine to help deal with it. So you're dealing with it in two different ways. You're having less of the harmful byproducts, and now you have more of the cure, basically, for those harmful byproducts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it hits it from multiple fronts, and that's one of the reasons it's so powerful, one of the reasons I recommend it to a lot of people. And like Tom said, like, they mentioned nitric oxide in these articles. They mentioned a bunch of other stuff in these articles as well. Like, I only pulled a few things. Like, that's what makes carnosine kind of confusing, because they see when someone eats more meat or ingests just dietary carnosine in some fashion, things get better. They're just like, man, like, this happens, this happens, this happens. They don't really know how or why, but the levels of carnosine really make so many things better in our body. And that's what makes it kind of anti-aging. It's like HGH, you know, it's just anti-aging. And if you want to learn more, obviously check out the articles. There's way more to it. And I kind of had to stop myself from going, because what I'll do is I'll always get caught up in the references and I'll just go down a rabbit hole, and eventually I'll have 10 articles pulled up. Each of them are like 20 pages, and I'm like, oh, I can't read all this shit. You know what I mean? So it's just, you have to stop somewhere.
Yeah, there was a lot. There's a really big rabbit hole you can get into with this carnosine thing, because it does so much. And it seems like there's not as much research on there, especially like recent. A lot of the research
is old, from, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from like 30, 40 years ago that they were pulling from. I guess they just stopped studying it for whatever reason. I don't get it. I mean, it seems so promising. It seems to have so many benefits with no negatives. I don't know why you stopped studying it.
Yeah, so promising. But yeah, so that's all I really want to talk about today, the power of the all-meat diet. So, yeah, you have anything else to add to it?
No, not really. I mean, other than like when I was reading through it, I just kept reading over and over again how they didn't mention a ketogenic diet is beneficial, but they just kept hinting at it, like, yep, dietary restriction, time-restricted eating, all, yep, that stuff. Just, you know, promoting the ketogenic diet with intermittent fasting without saying it by name.
You know, that stuff, I didn't mention that either, but I realized that, yeah, because if you ever read anything on anti-aging, caloric restriction is going to come up. And another word they use for caloric restriction is time-restricted feeding, which is intermittent fasting. And me and Tom have both talked about that in various podcasts. All that eventually does is make your body burn fat for fuel and put your body in a more fat-burning state, which is really what the keto diet is all about. But nobody really will say keto. No one cops to that.
Yeah, I specifically remember them talking about a way to like lower methylglyphosyl production is to do like feed the rats one day and like every other day. You do every other day of feeding, which is basically you're putting them in a state of ketosis for that day that you're not feeding them.
Yep, but then not once do they say keto.
No, maybe they don't know it. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I know. But all right, yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.